Every Arizona homeowner's best friend.
Come on in, Arizona. It's open home hour, open to you, the Arizona homeowner. Whatever you want to talk about, your home, castle, or cabin. 1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE for you. Text questions can be sent to 411-923. You can also email us at info@rosieonthehouse.com. Those are all the ways you can communicate during the live broadcast. Whatever you're trying to tackle around your home, castle, or cabin, this hour is for you, our third and final hour of our weekly radio broadcast. 8 o'clock hour, we call it our outdoor living hour. We rotate a host of different outdoor specialists, agriculture, agritainment, arboriculture, master gardening, urban farming. 9 o'clock, our on-the-house hour, we spend it on one particular element of your home with one of our certified partners to give you a deep education of that particular piece of your home. In particular, today we were on the roof with Armored Roofing. But 10 o'clock, that's you, whatever listener-driven topics come in, we like to cover and help provide that answer for you. Last week, we took a call. Bruce Stumbo from Rosie Wright Remodeling is in studio with us on the woodpeckers, and had mentioned that sometimes a lot of our roofers say they swear they're chasing insects, mm-hmm. and if you treat the area. One person did write in and said something about, it's mating season, and the reason I didn't really tied into that is because they were kept coming back to the same spot. And mm-hmm. it was so beat down. Mm-hmm. During mating season, they're looking for the loudest thing.
Yeah.
That it would probably have found fresher piece of wood or something that they can make more noise from. But they do like to establish their territory with noise from mm-hmm. their beak.
Yeah, we at our office just the other day, I was sitting there. It was on a Monday. I was kind of – Monday's pretty quiet around the office, and it was all of a sudden I heard tuk, 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 and it was banging on the masonry wall outside of my office. It didn't last very long, but I think it decided to go bang on something that wasn't block. But
funny, and the roof cap on that building
is metal. Yeah.
What I always remembered when we officed there is it would just thunder down and out of nowhere. Yeah. Like, what the?
Yep. Yeah, I used to. Once upon a time when I worked for an inspection and engineering company, I'd be in a lot of empty houses, and there were a number of times, particularly this time of year when they really get active, that I'd be walking through an empty house by myself and all of a sudden, bam, 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 and it was like a gun was going off in there.
Deterrent. There's a lot of things you can do. One of the best things to do, especially during the mating season, is because they are protected, it's not like you can mm-hmm. Get an exterminator out there to exterminate, eradicate.
Nope.
Is give them something else that makes noise. At the back of the property, an old metal coffee can, just something to distract them. Grass is greener over here. Come over here. Stay away from my house. There's a lot of people. You see the fake owls that people mm-hmm. put up. Usually, those have a very short lifetime.
Yeah.
It might have an immediate effect, mm-hmm. but if he likes the area in the neighborhood
mm-hmm.
and he's only moves a few feet away or a house or two down, they figure out pretty quick that thing's not moving.
Not moving, yep. Yeah, I think we've all seen those fake owls, and a bird is like, a pigeon is sitting next to it. And like, yeah, that thing's not working anymore.
We see a lot of creative things with old CDs that people mm-hmm. hang up from the eaves with a thumbtack on mm-hmm. some fishing line that twirl and the wind and make noise. They're not aesthetically pleasing. And again, one of those things that they just get used to and adapt to.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, you'll see the foil on a lot of commercial buildings, and I'm starting to see it more in residential. They have those little kind of pyramid-shaped flashers, that go on posts that you put on top of air conditioning units and stuff like that. But once again, they don't look good. But if you have that much of a bird problem, sometimes you just have to do something that works. So,
and one of the most effective ways we have found is a motion activated sprinkler. Mm. You hook it up to your hose. It's got a battery that comes with it. Senses motion, and actually I'm looking now because the manufacturer we used to use, I can't find it anymore. It was like Contact Connec or something like that. They have not seemed to be around in a while, so I'm not sure that original manufacturer's there. But looking at some of the other ones, Critter Ritter, Abrotech, cat repellent, but any type of, whether it's cat, woodpecker, animals in general, you know, don't like to be sprayed. And this motion-activated sprinkler is pretty effective. And if it's if it works here and it just goes the other side, well, you can daisy chain these together with multiple hoses. Mm-hmm. You just have to remember that, obviously, if, you know, when you go on your yard,
when the kid
going
when
to
the,
mow,
when the kids walk across the yard.
But that has been one of the most effective ways we have found to keep animals out. Motion-activated sprinkler, obviously, pointed away from your home. So that's one. One area, question that we're getting a lot this week, and we actually, not only we had the question on air last week, we had this emailer write in about it, but we also had a call in the last hour towards the end of the segment. So I've got woodpeckers, what can I do? And our exterminators will help in the sense that, you know, helping put up deterrents, finding ways to make it aggravating and uncomfortable that it eventually leaves, but there's no lethal...
No, you
option for you.
You just have to try to deter, and that's that's all you can do.
That's it. Now, when one of the things we do here at Rosie on the House to complete the execution of our mission of being every Arizona homeowner's best friend is finding different ways to reach Arizona homeowners. This is our radio broadcast that is now how long? 1988. However many years it's been since then.
Yeah, it's too early for math. 36,
37 years of the radio broadcast. Well, we expanded to podcasting when that came out, which is basically just recording the radio broadcast and putting it online for people to go stream it later. You know, the first 20-some-odd years, you know, there was no such thing. Once it was over, it was over. And we had some old cassette tapes that it was recorded on, even some old A-track tapes originally. Then we were recording on mini-disc for backup and archiving and historic factor. Now it's all digitally done. But, you know, one funny thing is, you know, you always think, oh, let's do a best of. And, you know, let's pull some of the old stuff. And you go back and you listen, you're like, man, it just wasn't very good. I don't want to torture people with that again. The recording sounds bad. You're not happy with yourself. Did I really used to sound like that?
Yeah.
This can't be good radio. Let's not torture them. So one area that we've expanded to recently that we've been playing with, and we've got a few promos running on it now. We're still working on perfecting it, is we'll video record the broadcast, and then every talking point that somebody may be looking for an answer for searching, we have it in a video platform on YouTube. That's a very, you know, a lot of people use that for recipes, how to fix a toilet, you know, fill in the blank, watch a quick YouTube video. So with our guests and our trade specialists, we'll pull specific talking points out from there, put them in a playlist for that hour, but put keywords about what that particular topic is. And one of the things I found last night, I've never gone back and looked at them on my phone. So I used to, you know, I'll watch them and decide which ones we're going to keep and not keep. Because not all of them, the video clips are worthwhile. I'm like, that might be funny, but nobody's going to be searching that topic. So that's not really what we want to clutter our videos with. We want them content, educational driven. Well, something I found last night scrolling through, because I was looking in particularly for a clip from our Farm Fresh Hour covering beef varieties, is the naming. Right now, I've got the name of the hour, name of the topic, and then the question. But when you're looking on your phone, all it shows you is the name of the hour. So I don't know which clip, you know, it took me extra long time to scroll through and hit the clip. Oh, this is the one. And I only knew because of, you know, obviously being in part of the broadcast. I'm like, oh, this is the part that's leading up to the varieties. So now I'm thinking I'm going to reverse that, put the the question that's answered or the topic that's answered, then the topic of the hour, then the topic of the host, and reverse that three name order. So most of the time when you're going through YouTube looking for a do-it-yourself thing, you're doing it on your phone. So to make it easier for phone users, we're gonna play with that next and reverse our naming order of our videos, so that when you are searching it, it's easier to find, and you're not stuck scrolling through 13 segments that all start with Farm Fresh that you can't tell which one is beef varieties or whatever the case may be. An example for last hour, you know, instead of it being roofing maintenance, that'll be the last thing I put in there, and we'll start with, you know, whatever we covered in that, whether it was the shingle or the roofing or, you know, inspecting your valleys and so on and so forth. So I don't think it's going to be as pretty in the titling, but it's going to be more functioning for the user to find what they are looking for. So one more area that we're now breaking into in the video realm, and I had avoided that for a long time, because if you've ever watched radio...
No.
No.
Watched radio. Oh.
Yeah. It is so... It was so boring. You know, check the Ditto cam. It's just some guy sitting in a microphone. It's like, this is just nothing engaging. But if we're breaking it into, you know, 90-second, 60-second, 120-second how-to instructional, okay, this is a lot more usable now than sitting there trying to go through a 15-minute segment, a 42-minute podcast for that two-minute nugget that you were looking for. So it breaks it down. This is this content here.
Mm-hmm.
So.
I'll say this. I got a favorite video on Rosie on the House, because I'm going to do that this weekend, and it features you, Bruce.
Oh, which one? The
flushing the water heater.
Good luck with that.
I had one installed a year ago, and I said, every year I'm going to flush it.
You should be in good shape if you did it a year ago and you're checking it already.
Making our way through another beautiful Arizona Saturday morning. You can join the conversation at 1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE for you. Text questions can be sent to 411-923. Just like Mr. Bill here, a regular listener and a retired fire inspector, we were talking about with Alonzo, if you've got an aged roof, mm-hmm. even though it's still in good condition, it's worth replacing that if you're going to put solar on.
Yes.
So you're not having to take the solar off, put a new roof on, and then put the solar back. You know, your 30-year solar, you want to have at least a 30-year roof with mm-hmm. that as well to get the biggest bang out of your buck. Mentioned seeing rooftop fires from solar, and it's mm-hmm. a lot of times it's from their inspections, it's bad connectors, water intrusion, poor connection, just poor workmanship is really what it comes down to.
Yeah, I mean, it's electricity, obviously. and electrical fires are, don't quote me on this, but for a long time, they've been one of the main causes of house fires in the United States. So,
well, there's not, you know, you don't see drywall spontaneously combusting.
Nope.
Your carpet's not just going to go up.
Yeah. If we do, there's something really bad in it. But, yeah, it's just, you know, it's something that you need to have done right. You need to have somebody who's reputable and licensed. And you should with everything in your house, but especially things like electrical, plumbing. You know, it's just – there's electricity is one of those things that you – unless you know what you're doing, you really shouldn't mess with it.
And solar is harder than you think.
Oh, yeah.
You would think Phoenix, mm-hmm. desert, heat, solar is a snap. Anybody could do solar. A lot of people think that, and they're out of business in a year, 2 years, a couple months. The biggest solar companies in the country, franchises, couldn't even make it mm-hmm. in Phoenix.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we had... Solar City, come in, gone. I'm trying to remember some of the other ones. That was the biggest name.
I can't even remember, but yeah, there were a few of them.
That moved in, they were everywhere, advertised everywhere, out of business, gone in 2-3 years. Yeah. And so now, at the point you need some service work done there, they're not here to do the warranty work. Mm-hmm. So you've got to pay a different solar company out to come and do it because it's not their solar. It's
yep.
system. It's not their warranty. Yep.
Not their equipment. They didn't install it. They didn't. It gets tough for sure. Yeah, we've run into that with some of our remodels where there's solar on the roof and where we have to pull it to add a vent or, you know, do something. And it you know, thankfully we have some really good relationships with some great electricians and we get it done. But if you were a homeowner, that could be hard, you know, so you definitely want to find it's kind of counterintuitive. You know, there's so many industries where people want to go to the big company because they figure they'll be around forever, but that's not been the case, at least in Arizona, in the Valley. That's not been the case with solar companies. You're better off going with like one of the Rosie certified solar people. You know, they have actually been around a while and lasted. And so that's, it's a little counterintuitive compared to, you know, the way that we view some products. So,
and going with actual solar panels. I loved the idea of the solar powered roofing tiles. Mm-hmm. So it's combining two systems together, but those were more prone to causing house fires, roof fires. You know, just new product, live and learn.
Yeah.
Don't want to be the test dummy on that system though. So going with the actual panel that has an airspace.
Yeah, underneath the panels themselves, and it's not just sitting directly on the underlayment and all that. So, yeah, I know they're still making them, and I would imagine that they've gotten
better,
safer. You would hope, but I'll give the solar roof tiles this. I think they look cool. Solar obviously has a purpose. If we're all honest, the big solar panels on a roof don't look very nice. I mean, they're serving a purpose, so I get it. But the cool thing with those solar roof tiles, and especially if they can continue to perfect it, is that they actually look pretty nice. They, in a way, they almost look like a metal shingle roof. So
there's always a time phrase where we're figuring out how to make it retroactive. When a new product is invented, more often than not, it's for a new build. Getting incorporated into an existing structure is the secondary part of it that comes along. And there's, you know, structures are different, roofs are different, climates are different. You know, the retrofit, you know, you may have the best product for a new build feature, but you're going to have to redefine it numerous different times for every retrofit application, elevation, climate, weather. Yep. You know, amount of sunshine versus rain. So it's part two phasing in on making it fit with the existing structure. Joseph texted in, last year lost a 10-foot mesquite, cut it down. Now I've got 3 shoots out of the one. Do I pick the strongest one and cut it off, or do I let them all grow? Well, depends on how tall you want it to get, but that multi-trunk one will actually be stronger and grow faster, and is more designed more and naturally how mesquites want to grow, as more of a self-protecting shrub than a straight-up shade tree that we trim them to be. Rosie on the House, we do it in the third segment every week of our open home hour here, the 10 o'clock hour. And this one, we put it at this time of year because you do see a number of flooring projects get done over the summer. People leaving, or, you know, this is something we're going to move this clear this room and get that room done, and then move all the furniture into that room and get this one and
that
piece
kid,
it out
that,
over the
that
summer.
That kid moved to NAU. Take over the room. And new locks on the door and new floor covering.
Or if you're going on vacation, it's a great one if you've got a flooring contractor you can trust, because it is something. If you're doing the whole house, ooh, I mean, you are completely disrupted. All the furniture has to get removed.
Toilets.
I mean,
no furniture, no toilets.
It's a great time to get it done while you're away on vacation. But we were talking design and flooring trends, because this one, I think, in particularly was for a whole floor replacement. This isn't like a – because at some point, your floor is going to be beyond maintenance. Where our weekly to-do is usually a maintenance item. This one's more like being prepared for that floor replacement.
And you want a note of sarcasm from Rosie Romero? Carpet is unhealthy after the first week it's in. The carpet people will tell you it's an air filter. Yeah, that's exactly right. It is an air filter. Boy, in my world, the house wall to wall is hard surface, and where you need area rugs, you put down bound edge area rugs that you can roll up once or twice a year and take them down to the industrial carpet cleaner. They get them steamed and washed out.
Yeah, that's definitely I'm with you on that.
You've done enough carpet tear out with me. I distinctly remember one we did together. We were both dry heaving out the window. It was pretty bad.
Yeah, it, especially if somebody's got pets. You know, that just makes it even.
See, you're getting me to dry heave more. Again. Right? But I will tell you this: luxury vinyl plank seems to be in our remodeling. Customers and clients and floor covering specialists at Rosie on the House, luxury vinyl plank seems to be the elephant in the room. I mean, it's the go-to more people are using right now. It's waterproof. It's resilient. It's fairly easy to install. There's various grades from good, better to best. So you have a lot of choices in the finishes. You can have any look you want from white to stone to wood grain. That luxury vinyl plank, yeah, I would say we're putting it down 3-1 over anything else. And the other one is probably the porcelain plank.
And when you say plank, I'm picturing like wood. I mean, is this tongue and groove? Or snap, they just butt?
Snap. It's not really like, it's not like a tongue and groove like you're thinking in shiplap siding. It's a little bitty clipping. Clipping tap.
Okay. And then what's it? Oh, you obviously on top of your concrete, you've got a subsurface.
Most of that luxury vinyl tile is floating.
But there's like a vapor barrier still between the concrete and the. So you say it's floating. So you're not nailing it to the ground? It's not mastic?
Not generally. No. Nope. And you need to leave it a little bit short of your outside wall areas. So then you generally come in on you cut it short of your existing baseboard, and then you put a quarter round all the way around the room, or you remove the baseboard, run it right up to the edge of the wall. You've usually got a little bit of room between the face of the sheetrock and the back of the sheetrock because the sheetrocker had to jack that last 4x sheet up off the floor. So they usually run it to about the outside edge of the drywall, and then they attach their base. But you do not caulk that vinyl floor to your baseboard.
No?
It's
got to be floating?
Yes.
And that is the correct way with the drywall. You don't want that, you know, it's wrapped in paper. You don't want that sitting on the, directly onto the floor for spills. Yeah. You know, that's designed to not be touching the ground. So it's, in this case, I would probably say you're going to want to take the baseboard off because what you probably have is not going to match this existing new style.
Well, it's a great opportunity to upgrade because you're probably looking at 2 1/4 or 2 5/8 streamlined baseboard, which we put in 99% of the houses all the way up until the 90s, and then somebody invented colonial. And, oh, we can put a 3-inch base in. So it's a great – if you're going to upgrade the flooring, upgrading the baseboard at the same time is probably a great call. But, Romy, it's like so many things we talk about. People underestimate the preparation on the floor that needs to be done. These click and lay floating floors, you got to be careful. And I tell people, look, if you remove a floor covering and you've got cracks that are wider than a pencil lead, get your termite pre-treat guy there. And have them treat that crack all the way across the floor before you put anything. Because those cracks through your floor, whether they're a foundation problem or not, maybe they're just concrete shrinkage cracks or control cracks. Termite pre-treat them before the new floor covering goes down. Those cracks are conditions conducive for termite infestation. So you're never going to have it exposed like that as you have right now. They'll drill 12-inch on center each side of the crack and saturate the area under that concrete crack with termiticide and discourage that from ever being a point of intrusion. So that's all part of the proper prep work of new floor covering.
And your concrete is not perfectly level. I mean, it was designed to be. It was installed that way. But, you know, it's all hand trowel at the end. And that's one reason carpet's so popular is, you know, you got to first put down that thick pad that goes underneath.
Covers lots of sins.
And then the carpet on top, you don't ever feel that slight variation. But then you put straight planks. You know, even if there's a 16th of an inch drop, you know, that spans 2 feet in your concrete, when you step on that, you're going to feel that up and down. So you may have to come back in and float your floor. Is it Ardex?
That's one of them. But even the waves in a post-tension slab, when you post-tension that slab and squeeze it together really, really tight, it results in a lot of little waves and ripples in the surface that your floor covering guy, they can handle it. They just need to let them handle it.
It's a love-hate relationship because they've got to come in and level it, so they hate that. But then that adds, 25-30% to the job? So you love it for that. And in the bigger homes, depending on the builder and the concrete contractor was, some of those guys, you know, they're not hand-troweling anymore. They've got those machines, that orbital machines. It's somebody that knows how to do it, which is not me, can do a really good job. But you can still have a lot of variation and kind of like last week when we were talking about sanding, the orbital sander can leave marks. Well, those machines can have that tendency as well. So prep work, you've got to determine if it's – and so when it's completely flat concrete, and let's say you've ripped out your old – flooring and you're getting ready to put in this new one, you can't tell by the eye either, and that's the hardest way to tell if you've got any variation. Would you just take like a 4 foot straight edge and put it on the ground and just kind of
The very start of checking it, but you'll find most floor covering guys will have an 8, 10, or 12 foot
a big one, and then you've got to be down on your knees looking and then you're looking for lights underneath
the edges
you're going across the floor.
Floor covering.
I don't know that there's an app for that yet. Checking your floor level. All right. That's your weekly to-do, design and flooring trends.
I will say this. One thing that's going out a little bit is ceramic tile with the big grout joints. But if you do opt to go tile with a grout joint, I couldn't encourage you more emphatically to not touch the grout until it's cured enough to seal, and seal it before the next phase of remodeling continues or until you move furniture back in. If you're going to grout with tile, seal it. I promise you, you'll thank me for that in about 2 years.
And when you say until the grout's completely hydrated, I mean, that's like a two-week time, right?
Okay, it sure can be. Yes, it can.
That's our weekly to-do. We cover it every single week in the third segment of this Open Home Hour. Keep up with one area of maintenance on your home, castle, or cabin. To the calls, Michael, Southern Arizona. Welcome to the program.
Good morning.
Yes, sir.
So I've got a new standard Champion Model 4 toilet, the one that shows folks flushing about a dozen golf balls down, and I've had it there for about 4 or 5 years, and now the mineral deposits on the water seem to be catching up, and occasionally I hear a seepage sound, not a flushing, not a leak. The float's adjusted to about a half of an inch. I haven't seen any problem from there, but the only thing I could think of is it's a different design from what I'm used to. Is that seal around the main dump need to be changed every few years, or any ideas?
Well, if it's seeping, if you're here, how long is it after a certain amount of time of non-use that you're hearing it?
It's not like it runs on a couple hours. I might sit down. I actually don't use that one often because my wife's son uses that. I use one in the master bedroom, but it seems like I'll go in there and maybe it'll start and go for a couple minutes and then stop, or maybe I'll walk in there and it has been seeping some. That's the only way I could describe the noise. I'm sorry.
Is it almost? I'm just trying to kind of envision it. Obviously, is it almost like a trickling noise, or is it like a drip? Or
a trickling would sound about right. Okay. Not a drip.
Is it possible that after it filled up, that what you're hearing is a little bit of water going down the overflow of the fill valve? Do you think that could be it?
Not that you mean the
inside the tank. Yeah, so you have the little overflow, the tube that sticks up. And
I've watched for that, and it's not doing that.
Interesting. Because theoretically, it's not real likely that you'd hear a leak because of the wax. So,
and just to emphasize on the overflow for anybody listening, what the float valve is connected to, that plastic pipe, the top of that is hollow, and that's designed, if for whatever reason the float valve failed to shut off the water, it would drain into there and drain down the toilet so it's not leaking over the toilet bowl into your home. So what Bruce was thinking is maybe your float valve was set to where it was letting water come up just high enough that it was seeping into that drain valve.
Yeah, I've seen that before.
Michael, on that rubber flap that goes from the tank into it, one of the things I've seen over the years that we've suggested people do, you know, drain the tank, you know, shut off the water supply, flush it, drain the tank, put a little balm, Vaseline, whatever the case, on that flap, fill it up, and see if that doesn't, create a seal that avoids that. And if that does, then maybe we just need to get a new flapper. Nothing lasts forever, especially if we've got hard water.
And a real quick way too is just put some food coloring in the tank and see if it ends up in the bowl. That's a pretty easy way to know if you're getting water coming down through the flapper. And that absolutely, you'd hear it. You would hear it if it's trickling through there.
All right, as we go to George and Glendale to talk about exterior painting, I've got to do something first, because otherwise I'll probably just forget and run out of time and then be stuck. We have Diamondbacks tickets.
All right.
May 15th, two seats, section L, row I, with a parking pass. That's my favorite part about going, is getting the parking pass.
Just get close.
First pitch is at 2:40, so if you can make an early afternoon game, just text D-backs to 411-923 between now and the end of this segment, which is exactly at 5650, and we'll just pick a random texter, and it's all electronic anymore. None of it's paper. We'll transfer the tickets to you. You've got to sign, create an account with an email, accept the tickets once they're transferred. So if you're willing to go through all that, text DBACS to 411-923, and we'll pick a random winner at the end of this program. You follow the Diamondbacks at all?
I do. Yeah, I enjoy baseball. I did when I was a kid and then kind of didn't for a lot of years. But for, I don't know, probably 8-9 years now, I've really gotten back into it and enjoyed it. And actually just went to the first ballpark that wasn't the Diamondbacks when I was in Georgia recently. And I went to a Atlanta Braves game. And that's the currently still the newest ballpark in the major league, and it was impressive. It was nice. I love the Diamondbacks, but Chase Field is a little big in my opinion.
Oh, really?
I think it should have been a little smaller. You should see the Braves stadium. It's significantly smaller, and I mean the Braves are known for having a very good fan base, and it's a totally different feel.
Maybe it might have the same amount of people, but you're packed in tighter, so it creates a little bit more energy.
I think it's even less seats, actually. Chase Fields is one of the biggest.
Well, that's what I mean. Like, you might have the same amount of in attendance.
Yeah, in attendance,
but if
yeah,
you've
exactly.
got 10,000 people spread out where you've got room for 35,000.
Yeah, it's a different feel. Cause, I mean, I was fortunate to go to one World Series game this last season, and that is the only time I've ever seen Chase Field full. Cool. So,
all right. Well, we got that's compliment of our flagship station, KTAR, and their sister station, Arizona Sports. So let's see. Let's get to George. Wants to talk about exterior painting. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. I have a couple questions on two types of exterior paints that I've been hearing about. One was a new one that I've never heard about. It was called a green cork spray. And the other one is the ceramic paint, which is more, I've heard about that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And just wanted your opinion on that.
Sure. So neither one of those are paints. They're exterior products that you would use in lieu of paint. Anything ceramic-based, we do not recommend for residential application. That entire ceramic coat on your home creates a vapor barrier so moisture can't transfer through. Paint is not a waterproofing agent, it's a shedding agent. And even when it's not raining, water's still transferring through those materials. So you end up with a lot of condensation behind the walls of anything that's got a ceramic coating on it. Those products are great in what they were designed for. Lighthouses, dams, concrete structures, especially those that retain water or in a lot of water environment. So do not spend the extra money on this quote-unquote forever paint product for your home that's ceramic-based. I don't know the green cork product. I'm looking at their website. This particular brand, but I'm very familiar with cork exterior coating.
Yeah, it's so, and I am not an expert on it myself, but I do know that cork exterior, it once again is more of a siding than it is anything else. It's almost like a substitute or replacement for stucco.
And it's and you can put it over stucco. You can put it on top of your concrete tile. You can put it on your garage door. And it has a outsolation factor. So not only are you, you can dye it any color you want. But it keeps the exterior of your home from ever getting above, I believe it's 89 degrees Fahrenheit, because that's the maximum heat that cork will go to.
Yeah.
So we'll cover more about the cork coating starting the 10 o'clock hour next week, because it is a great product. Now, you got to pay for it, but it's a great product.